This is that other sports shit. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, for like the 1,000th time, you're hearing my voice over your loudspeakers, over your Bluetooth speaker on your desk. Maybe it's your computer speakers. I don't know. Hey,
what about AirPods?
AirPods. You got the. I know that we got some people out there listening on some AirPods. But make sure if you're doing this, if you're listening to us at work, just make sure that you're still doing your work while you listen.
Yes.
You listen to our beautiful melodic voices, and you can get carried away to a different land.
Yes.
Dream a little dream of dreams.
Folks, we're taking you away from your desk. We're taking you away from work. We're taking you to an enchanted island where you're not thinking about how much you fucking hate your boss.
No. You are now being transported to a totally different place. You are in paradise.
That is
remember,
for paradise.
All you 80s folks out there, right? So Jay and I know this. Remember the commercials, Calgon. Take you away. That's us, baby. That's us every week. We're simply Calgon taking you away, but not through powder form to make sure that you are fresh and scented. We are doing it through sports takes, over-unders, and pick-ems, trying to hopefully win you some money and entertain you with some of our jokes.
At the very least, entertain you laughing at us for being just very wrong. But, Jess, I thought when you went 80s reference, you were going to go Fantasy Island with Ricardo Montalban and the little homie.
The plane, boss, the plane.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go there, but you went Calgon. But I'm down for any 80s references. Yes. Shout out to losers like me who watch 80s commercials on YouTube. This has been my new deep dive.
Bro, that is amazing.
Put on 3 hours worth of 80s commercials and just enjoy your life.
Yeah, you are not a loser, my friend. 80s was everything. The 80s represent everything that was great in America.
Jess, I'm telling you, I'm watching 80s commercials. I'm gonna preference it by saying it's perfect to watch while you're looking at your phone. So if you're phone surfing and you don't necessarily want to pay attention to what's on the telly, just put on YouTube 80s commercials.
It is pretty amazing. I'm going to try that just, next time I'm on overtime at work.
Just fucking enjoy it. You'll see so many commercials that refresh your memory if you grew up in the 80s like we did because we're old as fuck. And you also see like the one that I was watching last night, because I was watching this last night, was from a television station in Northern California. So it was Oakland, San Jose, San Francisco. So I got the combination of local commercials, like local car ads, which are fucking fantastic, and like your McDonald's commercial, your shampoo commercial, your See's Candy commercial, just the most Wendy's commercials, Burger King commercials, just the most random. I saw a commercial for an old video game that loses that I forgot now. But just watching the commercials, I was like, oh, video game commercials. I feel like we don't even get those anymore unless it's like.
Do we get them anymore?
I think you'll get them on television. It's incredibly rare. I think if you're on like Twitter or social media, you'll get them because that's the market they're looking for, if you will. But
yeah.
If you're just like watching a game or watching whatever the fuck you watch on the week, I think it's very rare. I think they're
targeted, you know what else
right?
I miss? And so you bringing up the video game commercials is cool because I also miss the action figure and the toy commercials.
Oh, dude, they're so great.
Like growing up, they were on all the time, right? Like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or the classic G.I. Joe. You know, like now, like I don't really see. You know what? I don't think I really see a lot of commercials in that genre at all.
It's awesome to watch the 80s commercials of board games that failed, random toys that failed.
That would be cool.
It's super fun. It's just throw it on and just take a trip down memory land and enjoy yourself. Oh, Jess, we're last pulling it up here. We're going to keep it tight. We're going to keep it moving, Jess. Episode 2, season 12, 13. We've lost count. We're looking at UFC pick'ems. We're going to hop into that next. We got the big pay-per-view coming up this weekend. We've got to touch a little bit on the wild card weekend because wild card weekend was just that. A lot of blowouts, so no reason to necessarily focus on the X's and O's as much as we're just going to shit on the losers and celebrate the winners. And then, as always, Jess, we'll wrap it up with the pick'em.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to try. I think the angle is we're going to save the Bills-KC game for last. I believe it is the last game, correct?
Yes, yeah, the KC
Sunday primetime game.
Yeah, Sunday primetime.
That's so good.
It's the matchup of matchups, man. Josh Allen's 0-3 in the playoffs.
I cannot wait to get to your picks. Please don't tease it yet.
I won't.
I'm very interested in where your head's at because where you're at Twitter-wise is your push for Josh Allen being the greatest football player since John Elway. It's pretty fucking impressive.
He's basically John Elway, Brett Favre,
Nolan Ryan
wrapped up. He's also Nolan Ryan.
Steph Curry. Who's that? Michael Phelps.
He's a little Dikembe Mutombo. I see him. You know, he's got the finger wag.
It's just everything. Everything. Elite athlete. He's got a sprinkle of Babe Ruth. Just a sprinkle. Just,
you know what? He's even got a little bit of Fedor in him. I'm just going to say that right now.
Okay. I'm going to cut off there. That's the Mendoza line. All right. I was, you know, with Babe Ruth, we were tickling it, but now we're stepping over.
I stepped over boundaries.
We're habitual line steppers, and we're like 10 minutes into this show, and we're already stepping on it.
But the playoffs were good. I can't wait to talk about the wild card weekend. It's gonna be a good talk. Then we have UFC 297 is what we're gonna. That's what we're gonna start with.
Are we gonna
talk anything about the UFC Fight Night? No, and the reason why, folks, and we don't sugarcoat anything on the show. Neither Jason or I or myself watched like a second of that.
I have an excuse. My excuse was I was in San Jose, New Japan Pro Wrestling Battle of the Valley. So rather than sit here and pump up some bullshit about a fight that I did not watch, although at some point I probably will watch that Ankalaev fight because, one, I got it right if you listened to our pick'ems last week.
Yes.
Two, I'm intrigued with the fight, and with the power of ESPN Plus, I could just go right to that fight and watch it and get out of it, get in and out of 10 minutes. But I want to spend this time on this platform of ours to talk about how dope New Japan Pro Wrestling Battle of the Valley was.
Dude, tell us.
It was the best wrestling show of the year. The critics have come out and they've already crowned it. I know it's January 15th or some shit, but the bar is set. Every match was good or slash great. A Jungle Boy Jack Perry appearance, which nobody was expecting, including security, from what I'm reading now. Like, the security was like, what is this? We're getting worked? Is this a work or a shoot, brother? an amazing Moxley versus Shingo no DQ match where these guys bled all over San Jose. Ospreay, Okada, I mean, what more needs to be said? It was just one of those matches which was incredible. Riddle, we got to see Riddle with Jeff Cobb take on Zack Sabre Jr., who I am an enormous fan of. Riddle versus Zack Sabre Jr., when they do that, that's going to be fireworks. When they figure out, when they get that down and they get those two guys in a ring, not in a tag match, not in a triple threat, just those two dudes. Please, New Japan people, give me a 60-minute Ironman match with those two dudes, and I am willing to pay whatever y'all want to charge me on Fight TV. And then, of course, Jess, the great Eddie Kingston, who is just over as a motherfucker. Anywhere I go, anytime I watch Eddie Kingston wrestle, he is over as the superstar or world champion. Whether I'm watching him in AEW live or in New Japan live. This is the second time I've watched him in New Japan. Last year was against Switchblade. That was the Switchblade leaves New Japan match. And this match with Gabe Kidd, who I've never seen wrestle, and I was fucking impressed. He's got a little bit of a Danielson, a little bit of a Thatcher, that real hard style. A lot of chops. So overall, just a fantastic show. Again, not a bad match. So if you're just looking for great pro wrestling, check it out. I believe it's on Fight TV, Battle of the Valley, New Japan. Went a little long. I think when it was all said and done, it was like almost 4 hours. It was like, yeah, dude, it was long. 3.5. I mean, easily 3.5 hours. I want to say 3.5 hours, but it was a good time. But Jess, the bad news is we didn't watch the UFC. The good news is we keep it moving because I have the preliminary card up. I'm looking at it. It's kind of mama mid. Pollyanna Viana's fighting. She's cute. She's fighting Jillian Robertson, who I feel like has become their women's jobber gatekeeper, if you will. You got Charles Jourdain on the pre-card, but again, there's not a lot of sexy stuff, Jess. So if it's okay with you, I say we jump right into the main card and our who you gots.
No, I absolutely agree. Let's get to the main card and do it that way, man.
I'm seeing at the bottom, it looks like, as I jump around pages, Arnold Allen versus Movsar.
He was a popular name for a minute.
Arnold Allen is?
Yeah.
I believe he still is.
I'm surprised he's this low on the card, but, well, I mean, very popular name. The guy he's fighting.
This is an incredible matchup, Jeff.
This looks like an incredible matchup.
I'm all in. All right. I'm trying to get to the odds here because the page that I'm looking at isn't giving me odds. Here we are.
So it looks like Evelev or Evelov, excuse me. He is a slight favorite in this matchup.
What, I've never seen this guy Evloev fight, and so for him to be a
Movsar Evelev,
for him to be a favorite against Arnold Allen is crazy to me. He's ranked in the top 10.
You know, Evelev's beaten Dan Ige,
ooh,
Nick Lentz.
Those are names.
Lopez. I can't believe he's even fighting these guys. I've never even seen these guys. I know who those guys are. I've never seen him.
Why is he beating guys that we know, but we don't know this guy?
The sad thing is, though, it's all decisions. So he comes from that camp. He comes from that Khabib camp. You know what I mean?
He's grapple fucking.
He's over there in American Top Team. Oh. You know, hanging out with Khabib and those guys.
My dog.
He's one of Khabib's boys.
Give me who you got. This is tough because I'm already juggling my pick 'em. So who you got?
I hate striker versus wrestler matchups. Striker versus grappler matchups are a terrible matchup for the striker. Strikers are always looking to set up things with kicks and punches, whereas the grappler is looking to set up takedowns via those same kicks and punches. Arnold Allen is a very dynamic striker. I think that it would be hard-pressed for Evlev to try to stand with him. The way I probably see it, unfortunately, going is Arnold's going to take an L via decision and Evlev's wrestling and grappling skills. Because every match that Evlev's been in has basically been a decision. So I'm telling you, slow, methodic, lots of takedowns. I think Evlev picks up the win.
Yeah, Jess, I'm going to piggyback off of what you said. It's our usual stance that we've used the last 10 years recording these shows. If it stays standing, Arnold's going to benefit. If it goes grappling, Evloev will definitely benefit. I lean with Jess here. I like Evloev in a decision. Interesting spot for Arnold because you hate to see him lose two out of his last three, especially a guy that's ranked a lot lower. So very tough fight. Rooting for Arnold. Would not be going with Evelev here. Next fight, Jess, got a little bit of another pick'em here. I am an enormous fan of Chris. I believe his nickname is the Action Man, Curtis, versus Marc-André Barrialt. Barrialt is from Canada, so I'm trying my hardest to do a little GSB. I believe that the Action Man is a slayer. Who you got?
Chris Curtis is going to be the slight favorite based on like just the people he's fought. But I'm going to tell you right now, like, I think that Curtis is past that point where people thought that he may be entering his prime, and perhaps he was. But there's a difference when a certain type of athlete hits his prime and then another type of athlete that's a lesser athlete hits his prime, right? Like, Chris Curtis was a big, big, heavy dude, lost a bunch of weight. He's flopped up and down, like, different weight classes. And for one thing, I totally disagree with that. I think that you hit a weight class that you're comfortable in, that you're strong in, that you make weight in easily, and you stay there. Curtis is kind of flip-flop back and forth. Here he is now. taking on Berialt. Berialt looks like he's had a pretty steady career coming up through the ranks. I think that this is one of those old guys in and then old guys out, new guy in type matchup. Ooh. I'm going to go with Berialt. I think that he grounds and pounds him. I think he won't finish Curtis. I don't think Curtis has really gotten finished too often, but I can see Berialt winning by decision.
I watched Berialt's fight versus, I believe it's Eric Anders.
Yeah, Eric Anders fight. That was a good fight.
And I think that he's a great stand-up fighter. I hate to go back to the GSP reference, but I think we got a little bit more athlete and less fighter in Marc-Andre.
Yeah.
I'm going opposite pick here, Jaslyn. I pick him. Wow. I am going Chris Action Man Curtis. I love his stand-up. I believe he does a great job of throwing uppercuts and knees to avoid shoot takedowns. And I think he's going to do just enough here. I'm going to go on a limb and go knockout here. I think he knocks out Marc-Andre sometime in the second round. I think he drops him. And if he doesn't starch him, he'll put some ground and pound, some finishing punches there together to get Marc-Andre out of there. So I'm going Chris Curtis knockout round two.
Nice. Hey, if it happens, it happens. I mean, these are two fairly well-stacked and jacked young men at the middleweight division. And the only problem is the middleweight division is pretty thick right now. Mm-hmm. Berialt could possibly be a star in this division or a star in the making in this division.
You got to string together Curtis two, three
really
big
dampens
fights.
That light. So
you're right.
See what happens.
You're correct. Great call. Great call on that. And this is why I think his thought process is I'm getting a ranked fighter. Even if he's only ranked 14, I'm still getting someone that's ranked. But I agree with you. If you're going to make a name here, this is the initial stepping stone, because once you beat him, you do the whole, hey, give me someone ranked in the top 10, outside of the 10.
You do the Jim Miller. You do the Jim Miller from last week's card, and you call out Brock Lesnar.
I love that idea. I love that idea, too. Hey, you know what? Can you stick me in a machine, make three of me, just copy and paste three Jim Millers, and then
we'll just all fight Brock.
Two go for takedowns, and one goes for the neck. I've seen him fight the Hardy brothers. What's the difference?
Oh my gosh.
All right. Neil Magny.
Who our boy Neil Magny.
And Mike Malone. This fight is a sneaky banger, Jess. I believe that Malone is a slight dog.
Slight dog. Magny's getting that quote unquote home field advantage, +3. Magny's he's the vet. He's the guy, he's coming in. He's had some of the big fights, some of the big matches. Malo is coming in as the slight underdog, the young and up and coming guy, which I also have to say, you've already referenced GSP a couple of times, with Berialt, Malo again, coming from Canada. I don't remember if he's fights in the same fight camp or anything, but I have to admit, it's nice to see such a variant of fighters from other countries coming up through the ranks. You know, for a minute there, it was it was all Brazilians. For a minute there, it was all Americans. For a minute there, it was now we have this dusting of a little bit from here, a little bit from there. I love to see the mix and match from the different athletes representing different countries in the UFC.
This is, who'd you take, by the way?
I didn't even pick, man. I got Magny, though.
That was a nice
Malo. I like Malo. I like him a lot. I think that he's scrappy. He's definitely an athlete. I think that that's one of those similarities in that whole, GSP Canada, MMA, references. These guys are athletes, man.
They could be on the basketball court right now. He could be playing point guard. I hate to label fighters like that. We're doing the MLB Puerto Rican Colombian thing, and I hate to we're habitually line stepping on prejudice. I agree with you. It's almost too easy to color by numbers and go, well, he's from Canada, he's from those camps where a lot of those guys mimic a GSP style.
They're former hockey players, man, and there I go again.
Scrappy as fuck. I got Magny.
I think Magny wins. I'm going Magny. I'm actually going Magny TKO. Magny's got some of the wildest hands I've ever seen. And I don't mean that they're great hands. I don't think his striking is phenomenal. I'm just saying
he's wiry.
Like the way he throws the different angles. He's got those really long, semi John Jones arms where he can just throw a hook from a mile out. I love Magny in this fight. I think it's a poorer matchup for Malo. And I think Magny's going to end up getting him, like catching him somewhere in the second round, late second round, getting him finished.
You know, I thought you were going to lean Malo here. And I was ready to go, wow, we're going to disagree on this fight. But no, I am in agreement with you other than the knockout. This is going to be a big stagnant grappling match for about 7 to 10 minutes, I think. You're just going to get two guys locking horns, and I don't think Malote's going to be able to get takedowns on Magny because he's just so great at avoiding takedowns. And I think Magny's going to do the same thing. We're just going to get a lot of washout, and I think it's going to come down to the stand-up here, and I favor Magny's stand-up. I don't think he gets a knockout. Wouldn't surprise me if he hurt Malo, but I think Magny does enough in three rounds. I think it's like a 2-1 type finish, a 29-28 score for Magny. So give me Magny via judge's decision. Jess, we are already at the co-main event and main event, so we are moving. I love it. Raquel Pennington, she is taking on Mayra Bueno Silva. I have been on the Bueno Silva train for a minute here. I think she's outstanding. Jess, who you got?
I got Raquel, man. Raquel's a scrapper, dude. I love Raquel a lot, like, as far as the fighter is concerned. I know that she's had one of them up-and-down careers. Mayra Bueno Silva is definitely an up-and-comer, but I just don't think that she's going to be able to handle Pennington's pressure. But, like, both of these ladies tend to put a lot of pressure on their opponents. Well, now you have kind of a dual situation where, like, you can't, there's no real advantage, but Pennington's advantage is that I believe that she hits a lot harder. Mm-hmm. Like, she hits like a little tiny Mack truck, right? And so I believe that Pennington's going to be able to boss Silva around the cage and push her weight and kind of do what she needs to, that cage control, that ring presence that we talk about. And Pennington's going to get the decision win.
I think stylistically, Bueno Silva is a nightmare for Pennington. I think that when this hits the mat, and it will at some point hit the mat in that second or third round, Pennington is going to have a lot of issues. This may be, I think a great comparison is going to be, the guy's name is escaping me right now. Who is the UFC bantamweight champion that we just talked about? Not Moreno, not Figueroa. His name's escaping me right now. But he just fought Raw Dog Royal. You know his name offhand, Jess?
No, I'm looking him up right now.
He just fought about 45 to 60 days ago. Pantoja. Pantoja versus Roy Ball. Right. And yeah. there was an enormous gap when they started grappling, where you could see Pennington is, or you could see Raw Dog is great on the ground, but he's just good enough to avoid getting submitted. He's getting put in positions that are bad, but he's not getting submitted. I think that's going to be this type of fight. I think if Buena Silva breaks her, it'll be like in the fourth or fifth round. I really want to lean submission here, Jess, but I'm going to give Pennington's pedigree and experience here the nod and say she'll survive five rounds. But this is going to be Bueno Silva. Oh. Wash, rinse, repeat. Takedowns, submission attempts, round ends. Takedowns, submission attempts, round ends.
So we're going to have a new bantamweight champion, huh?
I'm all in on
Buena. And new. Hashtag and new, baby.
I'm all in on Buena Silva.
Hey, I would not disagree with that at all if it happens. And like I said, both these ladies are phenomenal. Both push the fight. They push the action. They both have hands. And you are correct, Jason. Silva has the ground advantage, especially in that Brazilian jiu-jitsu department, seeing how that's probably what she's been taught since she was, like, you know, 13 seconds old. She's already wrapping her mama's, you know, cord up and putting in a chokehold. So, like,
she was submitting her Raggedy Ann dolls at like one, two, so broke a lot of Barbie legs.
Oh, yeah. Barbie's legs were done. They were toast. You know, like when you could, like, when you were like punking out your sister, like when you're young, you bend the legs backwards. That was Silva. She's like, ah,
pop. But Uncle, wanted to hear the snap. Say Uncle moves. I'm really, really leaning on that home fight. You look at how she kind of steamrolled Holm, and we were all just like jaw on the floor. No one does that to Holm, and she just did it. Now, again, I know it might be a father time thing that finally caught up with home after all these fucking years and all these fights, but it might have been a trending up versus trending down, which you know we love to use on this show. But here, I just think stylistically, again, Bueno Silva's just, she's an animal on the ground, man. I really want to go submission, but I'm not, because again, I think Pennington's pedigree and ability to just avoid the final, you know, cinch of the choke or cinch of the armbar will be the difference. So it's going to be something like 4-1, Bueno Silva. Main event time, Jess.
Ooh, here we go.
Sean Strickland, maybe the most controversial fighter in I can't tell you how long.
Is Connor?
Is he
more controversial than Connor?
But no, I think with Connor, we still had our checks and balances. With Sean, it's like he's just said so much dumb shit. It's just like, oh, he's being racist again. That's just who he is.
He literally told a story about his dad beating his ass when he was like a little kid, like after winning the middleweight championship. Like,
I'm telling you. And here's the conspiracy that's going to ruffle some feathers. All right.
Oh, let's hear it.
This Nina Dramacek that is always interviewing him. I think I've had my fill of her, and I'll just leave it there. I think I've had my fill of her. And that's it. I'm sure she's a sweetheart. And this is not me hating on her at all. I hope she does great things. And you know us, Jess, we love it when people make money doing what they love. So if she's making money doing that, great, great, great job by you, kid. But personally, had my fill of her and Sean's little Jay and Silent Bob thing.
I also feel that way about that Bobby chick.
Oh, you
Jason knows. Jason,
Listen. I'm a Bobby fan, but I think she is trending down.
I want to see her go away. So
I don't
badly.
Think she's putting out the same material that she was putting out.
It's like super like dramatized now. Like I can see like in the beginning how people were like, "Is this real or is this not? Like, is this just some random chick?" But well, now it's to the point where like everybody does know her. She's famous. She's making money off this. She's like getting banged by Drake. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
she's got
like,
endorsements.
It's not endorsements. Funny now.
TikTok endorsements up the ass. She does like TikTok ad, TikTok ad, interview, TikTok ad, TikTok. So she's got it. Like, she's cornered the market. But, yeah, Jess.
I'm going to tell you right now, this is the most misogynist thing I've ever said on the show. She's a 5. Yeah. She's a straight-up 5.
She's
a 5.
She's pretty plain. She's very plain. That's it. She's, and in L.A., you can't be plain.
This is how I rate her.
You give her a 5. She's like an L.A. 3.
I give her a 5 like DMX. That's it.
I'll spit out my bang right now. That was good. Okay, Sean Strickland. With that said, he's taking on DDP, Juris Duplessis, the African warrior. These odds are kind of pick 'em, Jess. Who you got?
You know what? For me, this ain't a pick 'em at all. Dricus Duplessis is going to destroy Sean Strickland.
Ooh, here we go.
We're going to see a TKO / KO of some kind. I don't know when it's going to happen. I'm going to say it's going to happen in the second. I'm going to say in the third round. I think Sean's going to be able, he's going to take some damage in the first couple rounds. He's going to take some more damage in the third before DDP puts him to sleep. DDP, this is the entrance that we've been waiting for as far as like a star in the making, right? Like we talk about it all the time, Jay. We talk about who's that guy, who's that gal that's going to come up, who's the next one up, who's the next John Jones, who's the next Silva, who's the next Iceman, who's the next Couture.
Well, who's the next Stylebender?
DDP has got the stuff. And here's the best part, man. Like him and Israel, they can even work together, like in training and stuff. It's not like they hate each other, man. I don't think that they like each other, but I think that there's a mutual combat respect. And DDP, he's a beast, man. We've seen him go in and just beat the brakes off some of the best strikers in the world. And this guy, typically, like, will he come out with some battle damage? For sure. Like he reminds me a little bit, a slight bit of Shogun back in the day. Shogun never came out of the fight clean, right? Like he always got clipped. He always got a couple shots.
He was
the strongest guy in that cage or in that ring. You know what I mean? DDP, he's got slight reminder of Shogun's style. A little bit classier with the striking as far as like a little bit more elegance to it. But man, he packs the wall up and he gets the job done. Strickland came up in this fight, or when he got his title shot. Let's be real, man. The guy was like, what, 3-6 in his last six fights or something like that?
It was 3-3
in his last six fights. It was something like that. I think he was 3-3 in his last six. And then because of injuries and some other things, he ended up getting graced a title shot, which he took full advantage of. And I love that, right? He becomes the middleweight champion. He takes out Izzy. That's awesome story. But here's the thing, man. DDP's been out here beating people's asses for the last year and a half. And he's doing it solid. Like, you look at his records, like KO, 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 TKO, TKO, KO. Like, this guy's putting people to sleep out here. Sean has not necessarily been doing that. Matter of fact, he's lost just as many as he's won. The biggest thing he's accomplished is obviously the biggest accomplishment you want in this sport, which is winning a championship. He's done that. But I don't think that he's the champion to go further. I think he's the title holder placement guy.
Mm.
And DDP is the one to come steal that away. I got third round TKO, Dricus du Plessis, new champion.
So first of all, let me say this. I'm going to try my hardest to take my dislike for Sean Strickland as a person out of the equation here.
That's a good person of you.
And just, I try my hardest. It's 2024, new year, new me. I'm trying my hardest to do that. I just want to look at it from a fight perspective. I just want to look at it from a just in cage perspective, right? Let's leave all the other stuff outside. So great point with DDP and Izzy. I think, you know, basically with Sean, he was a filler who took full advantage of what happened because Izzy and DDP fell out due to DDP getting injuries.
Yes.
He took full advantage of also maybe Israel not respecting Sean as a heavyweight contender. And, you know, we've reviewed the fight. Izzy got clipped and never recovered. Was he concussed? Wouldn't be surprised. Was he timid? Wouldn't be surprised. There's a lot of cause and effect from him getting dropped and nearly finished in that fight, which he did nearly get finished. Like, there's no way around it. At the end of that first round, Sean was dropped him and was whooping his ass. So you got, again, let's give Sean his credit and his flowers. With that said, Jess, I agree with you. I'm a big Styles Make Fights guy, and this is going to be a big, we're both going to drag each other into hell. I'm going to drag you into the deep waters. You're going to drag me into deep waters. Sean Strickland loves to do the let's whip our cocks out and see who's got the bigger cock. Let's have a cock off. We're going to have a full cock off here. I think these dudes are going to be fucking banging, slanging inside the telephone. There's going to be some chest to chest grappling. There might be some pumping up on the cage just to try and burn their opponent's energies out. You know, slow them down a little bit. Just you know, bring down everything. But I'm with you here, Jess. I almost want to say this goes 4 to 5 rounds. But I don't think so, because I think that DDP has got some dynamite in those hands. Not saying Sean does not. I know Sean does.
Yes.
But man, DDP, there's just some guys that just have fucking dynamite in their hands. And I, you know, the Shogun reference again, I can piggyback off of you and say, you know, the Dan Henderson, the Hendo, the H-bomb.
Yeah.
Some dudes just, it doesn't matter what weight they're at. They just got fucking dynamite in those gloves. And I think DDP is one of those dudes. That Whitaker fight to me, like, that was a dismantling.
Yes.
There are a few fights. His last two fights, and I got to pull up the fight before that. There are a few fights where you go, wow. Not only did that dude look impressive, but, like, he kind of beat that dude's ass. Like, he did this to Darren Till. He submitted Darren Till. What I'm trying to remember.
The Brunson fight. That was.
Did he finish Brunson?
Yes, he finished Brunson.
He destroyed Brunson. So he basically beat the shit out of three dudes that rarely just are, you know, are known to be getting their asses whooped.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to come a point where Will versus Will, DDP breaks Strickland's will and breaks his spirit And he's going to catch him the same way that Poatan caught him. And I like a knockout. I think I'm going to go with you. I think you said third round, Jess.
Yeah, third round.
Man, I almost want to flip the coin and say second round because these guys are going to be going at it. Like
they're
going
to bang hard right off the bat.
And so with that said, I don't even know if they if the chin lasts the 15 minutes to get to the 10 minutes to get to the third round. But I'm going to go with you. I was going to try and mix it up and maybe go fourth, maybe go second. But I'm in agreement with you. I'm piggybacking. I like DDP knockout third round. I think it's going to be a competitive fight, but it's all competitive. But also there's going to come that point where there's a definitive winner, a definitive loser. And at that point, give me Stylebender versus DDP. Woo. Pull Stylebender out of these jackass TikTok videos that he's doing with fucking pizzas. I know he wanted to take a year off. I know. Hey, listen, you got to give the people what they want.
If DDP wins this fight, Izzy has to come out of his retirement.
Dana, we know you listen. Please, if it takes a few extra $100,000 to get this guy out, if it takes $500,000, $400,000, whatever it takes, brother, you got it. Make this fight happen. It's got to happen, and it's got to happen in 2024.
Yeah. Don't let
Israel sit on the shelf for 18 months. Get this shit done in June. Get this shit done in 4 to 6 months. So that, maybe 4 is too short where Israel's going to be, no, man, I wanted a year off and y'all gave me 8 months. All right, then let's get it to fucking 10. You know what I mean? Let's get it to 10 months.
But as long as it happens like October through December, right? Like it's got to happen sometime the last few months of the year.
If we're appeasing Israel,
it can't go into 2025.
If the lone thought process is we just want to appease Israel and that's it, we just want to appease him. And so we are willing to wait. DDP is willing to wait. Everyone's willing to wait. You're going to get a lot of people bitching on the internet that the belt's being held up while we wait for this fight. But it's the fight to make. Like you've got DDP is clearly the rising star that we talked about that can be an international star. They want to make international stars. Fuck just America. You want these guys to be international. This is how you fucking do it. This is exactly how you do it. So, Jess.
And before we go to football, I do have to say this. The announcements that Dana White has been doing like over the next like four or five cards – are absolutely like mind bending, like soul breaking type fights. Like these fights are fights that I have not seen this type of lineup.
He's dialing it up.
He is dialed the fuck in. He is in it right now and he is sending everything.
But
I don't know what his deal is.
But
like, Jeff called up his ass and was like, you know what? I'm going to make 15 of the greatest fights anybody's ever seen in the next like 6 months.
But with that said, Jeff, where's the constructive criticism? Because again, we know he's listening. Where's the mega, mega, mega fight for UFC 300?
Any mega, mega, mega stars.
Oh, that's a great point. God, you just crushed me with that. Can we get Ngannou back from PFL? Can we borrow Ngannou?
You know what we need? We need Ngannou versus Brock Lesnar.
Oof. Can we get Brock? Can we get anybody? Because you're clearly not going to do Conor. Okay, if you're not going to do Conor or they're waiting to announce Conor, maybe they're holding out. I don't know what the fuck, the logistics, the testing. I don't know what it is. But you got to give us that. You got to, again, I've said it once earlier. I'll say it again. You got to give the people what they want. And again, we're giving you your flowers. We're giving you credit where it's due, Dana. You are making the fights that we want to see. You are making the fights that are going to make us purchase these pay-per-views. But UFC 300 is supposed to be the crown jewel, the big look at us moment, the same way 100 was and the same way what 200 was. You only get one of these motherfuckers. Do it right. Do it right. And listen, and I hate to say figure it out because easier said than done. Figure it out. But I mean, you gotta figure it out, Dana. What are we doing? All right.
He's not saying to figure it out because it's harder to do, but fucking Dana, figure it out. Like, let's go, bro.
I mean, Dana, hey, listen. One boss, I'm going to put myself over. One boss to another boss. sometimes you just got to tell your people to figure it out.
Yeah, you do.
All right, Dana, a master delegator is able to say, hey, man, listen, I've got us to where we got to get to. Now y'all figure it out. You just got to figure it out. Get the motherfuckers on the phone. Do it. I
fucking love it.
All right, Des, quickly, I want to hit the Saturday wildcard games. I want to hit the Sunday wildcard games. I want to hit the Monday wildcard games. I, again, was on the road driving to San Jose Saturday. I listened to the Browns-Texans game. Shout out our boy JVD, Justin Von Doom. When Jesse does not have faith in your Texans, I do. You pick the Browns. I pick the Texans. Sounds like Flacco finally came back to earth. And it's like, oh, wait, there's a reason he's a 40-year-old backup quarterback who sat on a fucking – who sat at home with his kids.
Hey, man, I made that pick for every man over 40, okay? I was doing it for all of us old guys.
We appreciate you. Any, give me 10 seconds on that game, Jess. What'd you think?
Browns defense just couldn't handle – the front line of the Browns defense couldn't handle anything. And the Houston Texans – honestly, I don't think that there's a lot. There's a year's worth of tape, right? A season's worth of tape. But it's still so hard to judge because they're such a young team and they come up with these wild formations. And CJ Stroud is a leader. Yeah. I mean, you can see everything about him that people talk. I mean, I remember people were shitting the bed over Houston taking Stroud. And that seems to have worked out just fine. So I liked Houston in that matchup. Looked young, they looked fresh, and CJ was playing really sharp football.
Yeah, I said 3 or 4 players to be the difference here. I didn't think they'd be made by Houston's defense on the back-to-back pick sixes. Next game was, I believe, Kansas City Miami, the controversial Peacock game. Give me some thoughts.
Fucking Peacock game. It was cold, and Miami's gone on this weird streak where, like, they're not known to be able to beat contending teams. So what was it? They beat Philly or something like that? Everybody was like, wow, they finally did it. And then they went on to lose to everybody else, including their wild card game against KC. And I don't know how to judge that game because it was literally like negative 10 degrees the entire game. So I don't know how to judge, like, looking at the offenses. The score was like 16-7. I'm basing that the score was due to being fucking cold. I don't know. Like, but
the ball being frozen.
The football being frozen, and you can't throw a frozen football. So, look, man, Miami's going to be fine next year. They're going to rebound. They're going to get some free agents. They're going to get some guys. They're going to draft well. Mike McDaniels has a great football team over there. I can say that now that they're out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they're no longer a threat. They're no longer a threat to Buffalo. So, shout out to at Smash Squad MMA. I think that Mike McDaniels, Vape Coach, is one of my favorite dudes in the NFL. I do love Tua Tagovailoa. I think that he's a great young quarterback. I can't wait to see him back next year, what he can do. And I don't know what's going to happen with Tyreek. I mean, the rumor is he's going to be like, fuck it, and try to work his way back to KC. I personally don't want to see that because that gives Mahomes more life. But KC's rolling. They got that win. It was a good win.
To add on to our boy Smash Squad MMA's conspiracy theory, let me just get it out of the way. Do you think the refs had anything to do with that game? Any big plays? Any big swings?
The refs have something to do with at least one big play in every televised game I've seen all year.
That's a very good point. Just to kind of piggyback off of what you said, and again, I did not watch any of this game, but I sure did see Taylor Swift dancing all fucking weekend on my Twitter machine. You take a fast track team and you stick them in the snow, they're going to have issues. It is what it is. Buffalo game was moved till Monday. First Sunday game was the Dallas game. So give me a few thoughts on this before I go ahead and spend a half hour talking about how much I hate Dallas.
Dallas. Jordan Love has really picked up his game. I know that we've talked more positively about him this year than negatively. And yes, he's had some stinker games, but it seems to me like at a good time of the year, a team starts picking up and rolling a little bit. And that was kind of the Green Bay Packers towards the end of the year, especially Jordan Love's play on the field as a quarterback. I believe that their wide receiver core is healthy for the first time all season. Their running backs, Aaron Jones, looked absolutely phenomenal. And I know that they're missing the other guy right now, but I think that Aaron Jones went healthy, Romeo Dubs, Christian Watson, that big-ass tight end that they have. And then, of course, Jordan Love is on fire, and he's dropping, you know, fucking missiles. I think that it's a really tough young team to beat. And I'm going to say this about Dallas. I feel that Micah Parsons has been dealing with some fucking injuries and just playing through it. He was looking slow, and he was slow to get up. And Micah's a great, great defender, great player, great person. He would never, like, pull punches, right? Like, he's not saving his energy for next year, right? Micah looked like he was hurting. And Dak looked like he was hurting. And Dak still threw for like 400 fucking yards.
Garbage time yards.
I don't care. I swear to God, Dak haters need to go drop it. There's not another quarterback in this league that you would rather have that's available, at least, to have in Dallas than Dak Prescott. Name me one guy. Name me one backup. Name me one dude coming out of the draft that you would rather have than Dak Prescott. You tell me Caleb Williams is going to lead that team to a Super Bowl? I don't think
Can we get Michael Penix late and let him sit on the back burner for a year?
That would be an interesting pickup.
Roll him out next year?
All right,
year?
So that's my take. I want to hear yours. This is going to be great. Let's hear it.
I mean, I'm depressed. You know, it's interesting, and I don't know where to start. It was probably the week of, right, Monday, when we realized – okay, the Cowboys are going to have home field advantage. They, you know, other than the San Francisco game, they're playing a young Green Bay team. The matchup after that should be good. You've heard it all week on television. The stars had aligned. It should have been not necessarily a cakewalk, but an easier path for them to get to the NFC Championship. Now, when we get there, all bets are off. Who knows what happens? If we're doing this show in 2 weeks and Dallas was playing San Francisco, I'm probably still picking San Francisco. And sure, and Vegas would too. But the path was there. Dallas, no call, no showed. It was just a complete and utter disappointment, failure, lack of everything. To see the Packers come out with the nobody believes in us type attitude and keep it for the entire game, it just felt disrespectful. You know how it is, Jess. You go through all emotions when you're losing a playoff game. You get angry, you get upset, you get frustrated. You're laughing at how bad your team's getting blown out because they're just getting blown out. But to steal a line from Bill Simmons, the GOAT, you know, Dak had saucers in his eyes at some moment. And it looked like when they were down, what was it, 14-0 or was 17-0?
They got down 14-0 pretty quick.
He looked fucking lost. The offense looked lost. And there was no true leadership from the coaching staff, from CeeDee Lamb, from Micah Parsons, who I am not going to be as kind to. There was no leadership. There's nobody that goes, hey, guys, snap out of it. Hey, guys, we're down 14-0, and that's okay. We can put up 14 points real quick. Defense, let's wake up and let's get some stops on third down. Offense, let's move the fucking chains so that way the defense can stay on the sidelines and get a little bit of a rest and some time to strategize. None of that happened. You know, the turnover by Dak early, which turned it to 14-0, almost felt like a death blow early. And any Cowboys fan that's been watching this team the last 5 or 6 years knows, oh, we're in a fucking heap load of trouble. We are in a world of trouble. No leadership shown across the board. And as a Cowboys fan, I don't know how 3 days later you cannot be upset that McCarthy is not fired yet.
I agree with that.
Everything that he did was inexcusable. And you remember, Jess, after the Niners lost last year, I said, you got to get rid of McCarthy. The year before that, the Niners lost. I said, you know what? This McCarthy guy, he may not be the fucking guy, but I don't know. Time will tell. It's an incredible shitting the bed, and it's inexcusable. Now, when it comes to Micah Parsons, and you mentioned he might have looked tired, no, they just schemed really well against him. When you watch those runs, they're doing a lot of I can't remember the name of the run, but they're bringing the blockers one way and they bring one lineman the opposite way, a counter. Yeah. You play Madden, Jeff. You should know the name, what they call it.
I know. You just got that guard that's pulling.
And every time that guard pulled, he punched Micah in the mouth. And every time Micah got punched in the mouth, he accepted it. And then the Packers were getting 7 to 10 yards. How many third and longs, and I mean third and 7, third and 9, third and 11s, did the Packers convert? It felt like every one of them. How many times on third down were the Packers going into pass, the Cowboys were blitzing, and there would be enormous rings of nobody covering a guy for 5 yards, 7 yards, 10 yards? That is that's
Trayvon's suited up in a Bills jersey right now.
That's fucking unacceptable. And I'm sorry, this defensive coach that everyone's blowing and is probably going to get a head coaching job next year, he can get the fuck out. As far as I'm concerned, you are not a leader of men, because if you were a leader of men, you would have lassoed all them boys together and went, "What are we doing? Wake up. We're getting fucking our teeth punched in right now. Somebody, anybody, wake the fuck up. This team is a mess. This team beat a lot of bad teams. This team lost to more good teams than they beat good teams. And if you want to even point at that Lions game, that's another good team they should have lost to. I hate to say this team was fraudulent, but if somebody is saying that, it's difficult to argue.
They're not as fraudulent as the team that we're about to talk about.
I am interested in seeing the Dallas offseason, because if they run this back with this exact same team and this exact same coaching staff, that is the fucking definition of insanity. And not only that, Jess, and this is where I'm at. If they got rid of Dak, I would not be upset. And I understand the thought process of, well, who's walking in the door? Who's better? You know what? Maybe we don't need somebody better than Dak. Maybe we just need a game manager. Maybe we just need someone that can hand the ball off to the running backs 25, 35 times a game. Maybe we need somebody that isn't going to turn into a fucking bad quarterback when it matters the most in the playoffs. And I'm telling you, Jeff, you look at those MVP numbers that everybody talks about. Dude, those are two games against Washington. Those are two games against the Giants. Those are games against bad teams where he is just fucking stat-filling. He's the James Harden of the NFL. You got a bunch of artificial numbers in there. And I'm kind of over it. I'm kind of over it. I, you know, when we lose with Romo, I go, yeah, but I feel like we still got it. When it comes to Dak, I don't have that same feeling. I don't have that same emotion. I'm more of a, be easier to cut ties. That's honestly where I'm at. Don't know what Dallas does in the offseason. Not greatly excited again. Just know there needs to be change. And that's where I'm at.
So I'm going to start here. We're going to go too long on this, and I'm sorry, but I just have to throw in my two cents about the Dallas Cowboys. I don't feel that it's necessarily a player thing. Like, yes, the players have to go and they have to perform and they have to. Dak's got to make the throws and he's got to make the reads, and CeeDee and those guys have to make the routes and the offense. You know, so I get it. Micah getting punched in the mouth, and maybe, you know, I still think that he's just playing banged up. He's had to carry a lot of the defense. That defense that we talk about as being such a highly thought of defense that we've talked about all year, I think has been headed up by Micah Parsons so much. And the sacks and the pressures have been counted on him to get so much. It's been a long season for the Dallas Cowboys. Their offseason is going to be crazy. I think where it really needs to start, where Jerry Jones needs to really dig in deep, is McCarthy's got to go. The defense coordinator's got to go. I do think that you almost have to rearrange the entire sideline. I think that maybe the offensive coordinator's got to go. I think you bring in possibly a Bill Belichick, and you say, Bill, you've did it with the Patriots for nearly 20 years. Like, I'm not asking you to do it for 20 years. I'm asking you to do this for maybe 2 or 3 years. Can you make our team great and see what Bill can do? Maybe Bill don't want them to do with them. I don't know. Like, it, you know, who knows really? But I think coaching staff changes is where you start. And then whoever the new coach is, maybe they like Dak, maybe they want to get rid of Dak, but that's all on that new coaching staff.
All right, quickly, Rams, Lions, fun game. Give me some thoughts.
It was the Goff versus Stafford, you know, number one, you know, it was great, man. But Goff, you know, coming from LA and Stafford coming from Detroit, it was a fantastic game. It was the battle down to the end. I'm happy for my coach, Coach Bro Campbell, you know, gets one in the playoffs. The longest drought in the NFL up to date is over. And being a Buffalo Bills fan, I can tell you how much of a relief that is for not just players and fans, but coaches and owners. Like, man, just having that on your back for such a long time. So congratulations to Bro Coach and Jared Goff, man. Goff played a great game. Both teams played a great game. Fucking Sean McVay, he's out of his mind this year playing some scrubs and doing what he's done with some scrubs.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sean McVay in the Los Angeles Rams.
The Nakua thing is an enormous get. And they're
180 fucking yards in the playoffs it's as crazy. A rookie.
It's crazy, Jess, because we thought the Rams were going to be one of the bottom five teams in the NFL. So for McVay to do the chicken shit to chicken salad thing, it's impressive. But Lions advance. Bro coach advances, and I'm interested in seeing what happens next. I think there's a lot of excitement right now in Detroit with the Michigan Wolverines thing.
That's true.
And now Lions. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But let's keep it moving. Let's spend a few moments talking about the Bills Mafia. The Bills Mafia shows up big Monday night. They show up at a snowy stadium. There's fans there with shovels. And at some point they just said, hey, this bitch is standing room only. Like, we know you bought assigned seating, but nah, that shit's out the window. Just sit wherever. It's cool. Give me some thoughts on this game.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Always a fantastic showing by Bills Mafia when Bills Mafia travels deep. And I know a lot of fan bases do, but Bills Mafia, they travel deep. And obviously, it's a home game. And this is big for Buffalo, man. Like, we've won six of our last, we've won six in a row. And a lot of those games have been playoff-type atmosphere games. Like, you can't lose a game when you're 6-6 at one point in time and you're trying to make the damn playoffs. You can't lose. Buffalo didn't. They won. They ran the gauntlet. They ran the table. Now, they come to the wild card game against Mike Tomlin's Steelers. Mike Tomlin, I will say, always has his team prepared. I'm not saying that they're going to win, but he has them mentally fucking prepared. And they were, man. But the problem is you come in with just, it's basically like you're playing basketball with one fucking leg. Like, you don't got a starting quarterback. You got two backups, basically. Mason Rudolph is not a fucking starting quarterback. Don't tell me that he is. He's not. Did he have a good game? Did he pick up things when he needed to? For sure. But the interceptions and the drop passes and the bad passes and that's why he's not considered a real starting quarterback in this league. Najee Harris had to take on a bunch of the offensive hassle. And when you're playing in like 18 degrees of weather, like getting popped by a 300-pound lineman does not feel good. Falling on the ground does not feel good. Hell, getting the football delivered to you in the stomach doesn't feel good.
It's like the game we talked about earlier. It's just the ball hurts. It hurts when it hits your hands. It's just like you're throwing a rock.
Here's the difference between this game is Josh Allen was the difference. And as far as me spouting out on Twitter land, Josh Allen should be the MVP. He won't be, but he should be. This is what I'm talking about. Like, he's taken this team, and even though he's not always looked good, he is the far front leader of this football team. It goes where he goes. It goes where his mental state goes. He says one game at a time, we're going to win, and they have won. And there's been games where he's controlled the action. There's been games where he's had to have other players get on board and kind of take that pressure off of him. But Josh Allen came into this game and said, I'm fucking winning this game. He didn't throw no picks. He didn't fumble the ball. He throws some great footballs. And he's throwing, this goes to show his arm strength, right? It's fucking, 15 degrees or whatever it was out there in Buffalo during the game time. And he's out there throwing just dingers. Like, they weren't always pretty, but he was getting the ball where the ball needed to go. The run game did well. James Cook had, near 100 yards rushing. The emergence of Ty Johnson, the former Jet, so much so that they released Leonard Fournette.
Crazy
the next day.
To me.
Playoff Crazy. Lenny, they say goodbye, Playoff Lenny. And I'm going to guess that Playoff Lenny was probably like, hey, man, why'd you pick me up and not play me? That's where I'm going with that, which is understandable.
That one is wild. I'm wondering here, Jess, real quick conspiracy theory. I'm wondering if he rubs somebody the wrong way or if he walked in with like, I'm a veteran. I need touches or get me the fuck out of here. And they're like, well, get the fuck out of here.
We talk about Miami Heat culture all the time on this show, even when it's NBA offseason. When you have a good culture and you bring in players to continue to cultivate that culture, and then you bring in that one dude who's like, oh, shit, like it just ruffles the locker room. Can't have that, man. You got to let it go. I'm not saying that Lenny's poisonous or anything like that. I think Leonard Fournette's a great player. I just think that he came in thinking he was going to actually play and get minutes, and that's not how Buffalo does things, especially with the run game. Anyway, the Steelers, they did what they could. They got off to a really bad start. They came up on strong in the late second half, third quarter. But third quarter, I was starting to sweat a little bullets. But then playoff Josh Allen comes back and says, you know what, I'm going to lead a couple drives. I'm going to get us down there. I'm going to score. Four touchdowns by Josh Allen. Two in the air, or three in the air, one on the ground. And the one on the ground was a 52-yard scamper where I can't remember the guy. I believe the guy's name was Casey. He's the corner. Number 39 got ran over like a Mack truck just hit him. Like, that kid had no chance of stopping Josh. It was one of the most awesome things I've seen in quite some time. It was great.
Yeah,
Buffalo Bills, they should have won that game. They won that game. On to the next.
The Josh Allen run is going to be that definitive run for the year, where if they win the championship, that's going to be the run that they show multiple times. Like, look at how amazing this fucking stallion is. Impressive stuff. Steelers, once again, chicken shit, chicken salad. The Tomlin stuff will be interesting. Looks like he's telling his players he'll be back next year. So time will see where they go. But Pittsburgh clearly needs a quarterback. Let's keep it moving, Jess. Philly, Tampa Bay. Here's your moment. I want to give you the floor. The Baker Mayfield thing. I said it last week. He's in line to have his Tim Tebow against the Steelers moment in the playoffs. His redemption moment, a moment they could write a Disney movie about. Give me a few seconds on this game.
I'm trying to remember who said it. I was watching ESPN and somebody was making a point. Oh, it was Colin Cowherd. Cowherd said, hey, look, man, like when Baker came to Cleveland, they wanted him to be the savior of Cleveland, to bring them out of the drought. And he did. He got into a playoff game, right? You know. But then the rest of his time in Cleveland, it was just injury after injury and just bad players and bad management and bad coaching. I can't remember where he went after that. I think he went to the Rams for a minute or something. He was backup quarterback for a minute.
He played a few different
games. Yeah, he kind of played everywhere for a minute. And then he comes to Tampa Bay at like what the sports gods would consider a great time. Like, you just had Tom Brady. Brady comes over, he wins you a title, right? Like, Brady comes over, he gets his seventh, like, everybody's freaking out. Then he comes back the next season. It's not like Brady had a bad season. Then he decides to retire finally. Then you bring in a guy who you have no expectation for. You have no expectation for the franchise. You have no expectation of playoffs, nothing. And Baker, he's played like ass quite a few games this season. I'm not going to lie. Like, I mean, my bottom tier Baker tier, it was real for a minute. But I have to say, late in the season, Baker's really caught on fire. You can see that his confidence is high. You see that the players around him, their confidence in him is high. And Raheem Morris really is doing a bang-up job with that defense, because they really don't have a great defense, but they're playing really inspired football. So I think that Baker has proven me wrong, and I have to give him his flowers because Baker deserves it. Like, Baker just won a big playoff game. No one thought they were going to win that football game. And you know, everybody, like, I thought it was going to be close, right? I think you and I both kind of figured,
I took the Eagles. We took the Eagles.
Yeah, we both took the Eagles to win that football game.
We were cautious. We said tread lightly. Tread with caution. Because everybody smelled the stink on Philly. Let me say this.
Like I said, look, real quick, just my flowers to the Baker. It was a good win.
The Baker sucks tier has been eliminated. RIP, the Baker sucks tier on Jesse's quarterback rankings. And you got to give him credit, you know, 5-6 years of being in the league and learning from a lot of mistakes has given him a little bit of a better, QB IQ, if you will. And, he's put in a great position with two elite receivers. And I mean, you can argue Mike Evans is going to be in the Hall of Fame Conwin's not bad either. I mean, and they put him in, the offensive coordinator puts him in a great position for him to thrive. And I'm not sure if he's had that in Cleveland or Carolina or the week he was in LA. Like, it never went down like that. So credit to him and flowers to him. I'm glad he got his moment. I think it's cool. With that said, quickly, Philly stinks. They're in trouble. If Sirianni and McCarthy got fired today, I would not be surprised. I don't think it's going to happen because I know my man was in a Super Bowl like last year. And there was a lot of disruption in their coaching staff, right? They lost two coordinators. The GM brought in coordinators. He brought in Matt Patricia. Like there was a lot of weird stuff going on there. So I'm not sure what happens, but there's got to be a shakeup there. I will say this as well. I think that the impact of AJ Brown not being in that game is enormous because all those blitzes that Tampa Bay dialed up, Hurts is going to throw up a ball to AJ on a 50-50. It's going down. Like there's going to be four or five different scenarios where he throws up a 50-50 ball to AJ, who's going to be on one-on-one coverage. And AJ is going to beat that motherfucker. Like, it's just going to be a different game. But alas, Jess, we've reached the end of those games.
Yes. Now we have new games.
On the new games, we've got four of them, and our marquee game is last.
Let's go.
Houston, 9.5-point dog across the board here at all of your favorite gambling websites. 9.5, Baltimore at home, 9.5 favorite. Who you got?
So I really want to go Houston. I swear to God, I do. I'm not going to. Justin, I know that I told you on Twitter, I said AFC Championship game is Houston-Buffalo. We got to go. And if it happens, brother, we are doing it. We're buying tickets. We're going to Buffalo. We're watching the AFC Championship game. But I think that Baltimore will be able to squeeze this out. Don't get me wrong. This game is going to be closer. I got Baltimore. I got Houston covering. I think it's going to be a close game. CJ Stroud has proven to me that his mental fortitude in a football game is strong as fuck. And he will not let this game get out of hand. But Baltimore is built for low scoring winning games. So I got Baltimore.
Yeah, this reeks of a 2017 1-20 wins. I like Baltimore to win. I like the Houstons to cover. 9.5 is a lot in the playoffs.
It's a lot.
I love Baltimore crowning, but it's a lot. Baltimore wins. Houston covers. The Green Bay Packers, they have an equal line here. They are going to San Francisco, 9.5-point favorite. San Francisco, Jess, who you got?
I got San Francisco. San Francisco's healthy. They're fully mounted. They've had an extra week to rest. Same with Baltimore, too. I didn't even mention that. They had that extra week, right? So San Fran's got an extra week to rest. They're going to dial up some exotic shit, especially on the defense. They're going to really confuse Jordan. I don't expect to see Jordan Love look as poised this week versus a vaunted San Francisco 49ers defense as he did last week against Dallas's tired defense.
You like the points?
I do like the points. It's going to be a 10-13 point win. Wow. Niners.
I'm in agreement with you. Niners win. Niners cover. I think this gets away from Green Bay late. I said that last week, picking Dallas over Green Bay in the points. But I think there's just so many leaders on the San Francisco team, and they're just so better built, installed better, coached better. I like San Francisco, and I like the points. I think this is going to be something like 30-17. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are traveling to Detroit. You know, Jess, when I was thinking about this line yesterday, I thought it'd be around a 4.5 to 5. Detroit is a 6.5-point favorite across the board at home. Jess, who you got?
I like the 6.5. I mean, if they would have gone as low as 5.5, that would have been better, I think, for bettors. But I think 6.5 spread is pretty decent, actually. I got Detroit in this game. It's at home. I watched the most ridiculous interview where somebody was asking Raheem Morris about the weather in Detroit. And he was like, don't they play in a dome?
Yeah, that was bad.
That interview is really funny. Thank you for some numbnuts reporter not knowing anything about sports or anything. Thank you so much for being there. I like Detroit, man. I'm going to ride the wave, the Bro Campbell, the Coach Bro. I'm riding it. I think that Tampa Bay will play tough. I think that Tampa Bay covers, but I still think that Detroit finds a way to pull out and win this game.
Shout out that reporter who's like, I'm going to throw a softball at this coach because I'm just prepping for Super Bowl coverage. I'm prepping for whatever the next story is. He's like, yeah, well, that weather in Detroit's going to play a factor. What do you think, coach? I like Detroit to win. I really want to say this is a 3 or 4 point win by Detroit. I think that
I
think Tampa keeps it close. I really do. I think Baker's going to really tickle our pickle again. I could see this being like 2017 late, you know, 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I like Detroit. I'm going to say Tampa Bay covers. Last game, Jess. And I want to make sure we got plenty of time here. We got at least 5 minutes here. So I want to make sure we give you plenty of time to illustrate this game out, because this is it. This is really – when we talked about Buffalo and Kansas City, I don't know, 3 years ago, whenever they had the 13-second game. Wasn't that – were referring that to, the 13-second game?
Yeah, 13 seconds.
We said these guys are going to probably be playing each other a lot the next 7 to 10 years, barring injuries. These guys are going to be seeing each other a lot. And here we are. And I talked about just how Dallas was set up perfectly with that home field advantage. It almost feels the same here for Buffalo. They are set up perfectly here. 2.5. I see 3 at a few websites, but we're going to keep it at 2.5, Jess. Buffalo favorite at home. Who you got?
The 2.5 is great. That's just Vegas saying that, like, it could really literally go either way, right? It's a pick'em. I mean, you see something that low, it's a pick'em game. And I'll give it to you. It is a pick'em game. Like, I'm a Bills fan, but I'm gonna call it as it is. It's a real life pick'em game. Kansas City has dominated Buffalo when it counts. In the regular season, Buffalo's picked up wins in KC. I get it. Like, it's all cute and everything during the regular season. But if you get to the playoffs, it's one and done, and that only that game matters. And KC has dominated Buffalo in those games. And I don't mean dominate as in, like, just throttled, right? Like, the 13-second game is one thing to look at. And then the AFC divisional game, when we lost to KC, again, another close nail-biter type game. Well, here we are again. KC, though, has never played a playoff game on the road.
With
Mahomes. In the Mahomes era, he has never not seen an alternate field except for the Super Bowl. That is outstanding football. That is outstanding coaching. I don't know if Brady can say that. You know what I mean? I'm not sure. That is insane to think that he has never touched an opponent's field in a playoff game. So, but here it is, man. I'm going to tell you like this. I say it a lot, and I know that other sports fanatics, that they'll say it as well. You got to ride the wave. Buffalo is 6 games deep now, including that wild card win versus Pittsburgh. And I know that Pittsburgh is not KC. I know that. But KC is also not KC for that we remember. They have – their receiving core is broken down. I know that Rashee Rice has, like, really stepped it up. He's been a great addition, a great draft. The defense is looking older and slower. And really, the only thing Mahomes counts on is now either kicking it out to Rice – or hoping that Pacheco breaks off a big run, or that Travis Kelce can keep his eyes off fucking Taylor Swift for longer than 5 minutes to look at the ball. Like, I mean, yeah, like,
two, you know what I mean? Swizzle references in today's show, if you're counting.
So, I just think that they're a lesser football team. I'm not saying that they're not a good football team, because they are, but they're not the same football team. Buffalo is on a roll. McDermott's got these boys thinking very highly of themselves and playing very high. For fuck's sake, man, we beat the Pittsburgh Steelers with literally third-string defensive players last week. And I'm not saying that to shit on Pittsburgh. I'm just saying that that's how well they're playing right now, right? A.J. Klein literally was not retired, but not playing football. He was on his couch. Everybody's heard the story. He had just bought an RV. Him and his family were about to go to Florida on vacation. Then he gets a phone call from Brandon Bean. Bean says, hey, man, we need you to come and play. Are you cool with that? And he says, yeah, fuck, man, I'll come and play. He goes out there, has 11 fucking tackles. Hadn't practiced more than a week. Came back, 11 tackles in the game, played huge for Buffalo. I think Buffalo, they get the KC boulder off their back this week. We beat KC. We cover because 2.5 is low. I know it's a pick 'em game. I think Buffalo wins something like, I'm going to go 27-20. Buffalo wins. They pick up a late score to seal the deal.
Am I wrong for assuming the weather is going to be the same?
It's going to be cold as shit.
Is it going to be the same or maybe a little less?
Less snow, but I mean, cold. They didn't have to worry about snow with the Pittsburgh game either, but they did have to worry about the cold. It's going to be cold.
I think this is going to be the game where we've been saying it all year. The experts have been saying it all year. Mahomes needs a receiver. He needs a DeAndre Hopkins. He needs a guy that can be a game changer. And this is going to be, and I've said it a handful of times doing games this year with you, Jess, the best receiver that Casey has on his best day is still a B-level receiver. And that ain't going to get it done in the playoffs. Outside of elaborate plays where schematically, like you mentioned, they can get Rice going or someone else cooking, they're going to be relying on a lot of yak. And I don't think that can happen in the snow. Again, you're slowed down here. They're going to be relying on a lot of Mahomes' magic. And I think at the end of the game, we're going to be doing a lot of Kansas City just needs another receiver. Kansas City just is one receiver away from being able to beat a team like Buffalo. I like Buffalo. I like the points. I don't think it's going to be as high scoring as you do. I think it's going to be something like 23-17, 20, maybe 2014. I like the points, but I also do think it's going to be maybe a 4 or 5 point win. I think Buffalo gets out by, you know, less than a touchdown. And we're, of course, going to have our nail-biting moments. We're going to have that there's 4 minutes left and Buffalo's up a touchdown and Casey's going to get the ball. And this is it. This is the do-or-die moment. But I truly believe that Buffalo just has a few more better skill players on the offensive side, and that's going to be the difference. If Casey can't schematic their way into getting 2 or 3 touchdowns, they're going to lose this game. Jess, we've done it. We've covered the UFC. We've covered the wild card games. We've done our pick'ems for this week. I'm not going to allow you to do the shout outs because I got to go. Shout out Variety Sports. Shout out the TMB podcast. Shout out Fat Boy Fadeaway Sports. Shout out Smash Squad MMA. Shout out Team Toss 21. We always retweet these guys. We're always retweeting their handles. So just follow us and you'll follow them. Jess, sound good?
Sounds good. I like it. Team Toss 21. Later, guys.
Talk to you next week, guys. Peace, y'all.